This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
This is Amanda Dibert. You're listening to Pantheon Podcast Network.
History in 5 songs. With host Martin Popoff. A production of Pantheon Podcasts. Let's rock out with Martin.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back again to another episode of History in 5 Songs with Martin Popoff, brought to you by the good people at Pantheon Podcast. We are part of an always expanding Pantheon Podcast Network. We're available on Spotify, iTunes, and over 40 other podcast platforms. This is episode 208. I'm calling this Glad They Went Poppy. I want to thank William Walker for suggesting this episode. The idea here is that, you know, I've always talked about bands, you know, number one, I kind of want my, at least in the hard rock realm or whatever, I want my bands to be heavier. So I've definitely had various episodes that have railed on bands for going commercial or going poppy if you were a heavy band. But this also, you know, falls into the other categories as well, progressive rock, general classic rock, I don't know, punk, post-punk or whatever. You know, bands can go poppy or bands can go commercial. Those can be two separate things, or they could start commercial and get better. There can be various things that I've been known to complain about with these bands. But the idea here is, are there situations, and I've never really thought about this much, but are there situations where I'm glad that bands went more commercial, more accessible, more hooky, catchier. And yeah, I mean, I guess just generally poppier in a lot of these cases. And I've surprised myself with some of these examples. There are actually a lot of examples. And the cool thing, again, about this episode is that I checked lots and lots and lots of different bands, and lots and lots and lots of different bands didn't go poppy or commercial, and some went the other direction. So, you know, bands can get more commercial over the years, or they can get less commercial over the years. Or they can just sort of change direction, and you can compare, you know, maybe two different genres, and there's no sort of relative commerciality difference between them. So yeah, so I've got 5 examples here, and lots of good honorable mentions too that are a little lighter, a little weaker, or and even a couple that I would have put in, and we would have had this History in 7 songs. So anyways, let's take a listen to our first selection here, and we shall discuss. This is Golden Earring with D-Light. All right, so this is from No Promises, No Debts, 1979. I've featured Golden Earring on a couple of different shows. I definitely remember featuring them on the one about electronic drum sounds that I liked, right? That was really cool. So yeah, what I love about Golden Earring is specifically this era. You know, they started off long, long time ago, 1965, Just Earrings, Winter Harvest, 67, Miracle Mirror, 68. Then they became kind of a fairly heavy rock and band, but maybe the songs weren't that good. Now, number one, they're Dutch, so they're a non-main hard rock and roll market, English-speaking market situation. So, you know, there are some kind of heavier albums in there, Seven Tears Together. You know, this is the, you know, a sort of a hard rock era, or a hard rock band and an era that people don't talk about too much. And what happens with Golden Earring after that? They get a little more proggy, but still heavy, and still the songs are a little dour, a little brown. When you get into the Moontan, which is kind of famous, you've got Radar Love is kind of their big hit. They have a hit later we'll talk about, but they have this big hit that's kind of like a Roadhouse Blues sort of song, right? Switch to the hilt. They start getting kind of cooler there. Really cool Hypnosis album cover on that. But my favorite era of the band is this Grab It for a Second, 78, No Promises, No Debt, 79, Prisoners of the Night or Long Blonde Animal, 80. Cut, they get kind of famous again because they get the Twilight Zone song and they're sort of an it band for a little while. They do okay, but not great. And then things fall back again for the absolutely excellent, though, N.E.W.S. album 1984. So, yeah, what I love is this period in the middle where they, well, okay, so let's move on. So then they have The Hole in 86, Keeper of the Flame, and they keep making records all through. But basically, their ship has sailed, so to speak, with Cut in 82. And with Moon 10 in 73. So they have their couple of hits spread apart by about 10 years. But yeah, they have a whole bunch of these really exquisitely written, poppier songs. Great recordings, by the way, too. This whole late 70s into the early 80s period. Beautiful, beautiful production sounds on these albums. But the first one is probably the heaviest and maybe even the best of all of them. With So Grab It for a Second with Moving Down Life, Against the Grain, Grab It for a Second. Just dark, kind of cool, heavy song. Roxanne, Leather, Temptin'. Yeah, the whole U-Turn Time, the whole side... oh, that's funny. Yeah. So they call side one, side one, and they call side two, side A. So yes, they're being little tricksters there. But, this album, this is from as well, No Promises, No Debt, No Debts has Heartbeat. Yeah. Weekend Love, Need Her, Save Your Skin, some really, really good songs where I've always thought these are songs that should be covered by bigger bands and they would have been massive, massive hits. I mean, they do a great job themselves. They should have been hits for themselves, but really, really good stuff. When you get to the likes of, yeah, I mean, you listen to the song Long Blonde Animal. This was called Long Blonde Animal, I guess, here or overseas, because mine is Prisoners in the Night, actually, and mine is an import. But No For an Answer, My Town, Cut Them Down to Size, Will and Mercy, really, really good stuff. And then, like I say, you get to their sort of famous period where you've got Cut, and that's got stuff like, you know, Lost and Found, kind of like really dark. I don't know, did I tell you guys this once? I mean, once, believe it or not, I did a whole university essay on Golden Earrings lyrics. But yeah, The Devil Made Me Do It. And then N.E.W.S. is the one where you get that really good electronic drum sound with Clear Night Moonlight, When the Lady Smiles, absolute classic. That's your homework for today, unless I go back on my word and tell you something later. Go play When the Lady Smiles. What an amazing song. So well put together. But yeah, so this is a case again. You know, people would say there's that music snob early 70s era, and then there's the mid 70s era, which are the you know, darker, murkier. Well, they're always kind of murky and cynical, but the you know, the darker, more proggy, more classic rock for sure era of the band. But you know, call me a poser, call me whatever you want. I love this late 70s period of the band, and again, it is when they are sort of the popular version of the band. All right, let's take a short break and we'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, back again here, episode 208, Glad They Went Poppy, History in 5 Songs with Martin Popoff. Let's take a listen to our second track, and we shall discuss. This is Tigers of Pantang with Paris by Air. All All right. So I have actually, I don't know what song I played on some previous episode, but I'm pretty sure I played something from Tigers of Pantang, The Cage, before. And I know I've featured this band before. Love them to death. Love the debut. The second album, Spellbound, I've often considered the quintessential sort of, it sounds the most like a new wave of British heavy metal album. I love Crazy Nights, although people tell me you're not supposed to like that one. But I've always liked it. But yes, this is probably the shiningest example of one of these for me that really, really surprised me. So that's kind of a theme with this Glad They Went Poppy. I'm surprised that I'm liking the band when they went poppy. But so this is Tigers of Pantang going quite poppy and quite commercial and literally predicting the rise of hair metal and doing the best job of it among any UK band possible other than Def Leppard going this way. And this is produced by Peter Collins. It doesn't sound like a Peter Collins production, but this is still the classic lineup of the band. You've got John Deverell in here, but as you can tell with this Paris by Air, it's a really good hooky hard rocky song. The guitar tones, I mean, this is a very powerfully produced album. That's why it doesn't sound like Peter Collins, because Peter Collins does a lot of crappy productions as well. But it's got some very experimental songs on here, like Making Tracks, very weird. Rendezvous is weird. But yeah, Danger in Paradise is good. They've got the cover of Love Potion number 9, which they do a great job of. You always see what you want to see. Letter from LA. Yeah, very, very kind of mellow. I was always a little ticked off. It's a little short. So it's a bit of a short album. But they're on MCA at this point. And they go poppy. My fond memories. I was in Nelson. Flash B. Lash down the hall. He loved this album too. And Lanny. You know, and it was, you know, so second year university. But yeah, we love this album to death. I remember this album and Your Eye Heap, Abom and Og being the two big albums of the time. But yeah, it was almost like a weird awakening that you can like this stuff and not apologize for it and just go with it kind of thing. So it was weird loving this. And then, of course, unfortunately, things fell apart from there. They went on to the Wreck-Dash Age, but they lose their major label deal. They're now down to Music for Nations. Major lineup changes. All that's left is John Deverell and the drummer Brian Dick. And then they do Burning in the Shade. There's even more lineup problems in 1987, and that's it. And then they reform later on. But those latter two albums are basically universally reviled. Nobody really likes them. But yeah, there's a lot of fans of The Cage. I guess I'm not the only one. This absolutely is one of those situations where I could see if this band would have moved to LA and kept kept doing the right moves, so to speak, musically, and kept the band together, I think they could have been huge. Because yeah, so this is still essentially the main lineup. Of course, you know, before The Cage, you know, they had John Sykes in the band for two albums, and he goes on to Thin Lizzy at this point. So there you go. An amazing version of Glad They Went Poppy, and I was glad they went poppy. Let's play our third selection here. Take a listen to this. This is Blue Oyster Cult with Fireworks. Yes. Okay, so this is from Spectres, 1977. This is one that I absolutely, over the years, have gotten more and more and more entrenched in this attitude. And also over the years, doing all these contrarians video shows and being on other people's shows, more and more and more entrenched is the fact that everybody universally thinks the first three Blue Oyster Cult albums, the Black and White period, are the best Blue Oyster Cult albums. People usually pick Secret Treaties. And then, of course, they've got the double live album On Your Feet, On Your Knees. But I love poppy commercial Buck Dharma written mellow Blue Oyster Cult. You know, it starts with Don't Fear the Reaper. That's not even my favorite. My favorites are on Spectres and whatnot. I love this song Fireworks, up tempo. But you know, I love The Night. You know, I even think Godzilla and Are You Ready to Rock have a certain poppiness to them, and accessibility. Again, the wider theme here is it's almost like sensible or logical or objective versus subjective to like a band when they get more commercial or more accessible or more hooky. All three of those words are positive words, right? So we're supposed to like this. So yeah, it starts with Agents of Fortune. That's the one that shocked everybody. That the band made such a change, and then you've got the visual to go along with it as well when they're changing into color from black and white. But that's the start of it. This is a poppy album, and people love this album. I've often called it my favorite Bluish Cult. I've often called the next album my favorite Bluish Cult album. One of our earliest episodes of The Contrarians was on Bluish Cult, and I said Mears, 1979. Was my favorite Blue Oyster Cult album, and that is very poppy. You got the great Sun Jester on there, and Dr. Music, Moon Crazy. There's a lot, and it's beautifully produced by Tom Werman, out of character, I might add. Very poppy there, and then, Burning for You is a big hit, and they basically turn into a band that delivers the pop about half the time. Across, most of the albums moving forward up into the present day, actually, although the new one, The Symbol Remains, is considered one of their heaviest albums, as is Heaven Forbid. So this, again, is another situation. Surprise, surprise. Glad they went poppy. Glad Blue Oyster Cult went poppy. All right, let's move on to our fourth selection here. Take a listen to this. This is Captain Beefheart with Observatory Crest.
Got outside. The sand was hot, she wanted to dance. We went round and round at Observatory Crest, thought we saw flying saucers and all of the rest.
Okay, so here's another situation where I'm completely contrarian on this. You're not supposed to like the two Mercury albums, both from 1974, Unconditionally Guaranteed and Blue Jeans and Moonbeams. This is from Blue Jeans and Moonbeams. I was actually going to play the title track. I had picked that first, but then I thought, man, I love Observatory Crest. It is so cool. Love the lyrics. Love Captain Beefheart's lyrics, period. I mean, he's one of my favorite lyricists of all time. But so you get with him, you get sort of the... You get the dark, growly, bluesy, but still eccentric early period with Safe as Milk 67, Strictly Personal 68. Trout Mask Replica stands on its own. It's a double album. It's considered one of those most unlistenable albums of all time. It's just a lot of sort of skronking, free jazz, noisiness. It's very dense. But then you get, so that's 69. Then you get Lick My Decals Off Baby 70, Mirror Man 71, Spotlight Kid 72, I think sort of stand together as an evolution of that earlier period. Clear Spot is an absolute classic, so I think that's the best of his early period, where it is the mix of just weird hippie blues and quite experimental, but still kind of songful. So that kind of ends off the great early period. And then you get these two albums on Mercury where he absolutely was going for a commercial thing. It's poppy. Most Captain Beefheart fans are not fans of these albums. They think he was just trying to make a lot of money. In fact, Unconditionally Guaranteed, right? That's the one where he's holding up the money and stuff. So it's kind of funny that way. But anyways... Then there's a long break, a four-year break. He comes back with Shiny Beast Bat Chain Puller, which is, again, absolute classic. This period of the band is an amazing, amazing period as well. They only make three albums. So you get Shiny Beast Bat Chain Puller, Dock at the Radar Station, so cool, 1980, and Ice Cream for Crow, 1982, which are very similar. So now we're into his more almost always experimental, always pretty kind of heavy and thorny and almost like post-punky, snarly post-punky, British post-punky. Great stuff. And then there's this weird Bat Chain Puller 2012 re-recorded thing later on. But essentially, it's those albums. That's a posthumous thing. We lost Captain. Those three go together. They're an amazing group. But I have lots and lots of time for the two you're supposed to hate, Unconditionally Guaranteed and Blue Jeans and Moonbeam. So yeah, go check that stuff out. Those albums are not on Spotify. So I think there's a case here of, erasing them from history, maybe sort of thing, or label problems. I don't know why they're not on there. They're on Mercury. You would think they would be. But let's move on to our fifth selection here. Take a listen to this. This is Black and Blue with Stop the Lightning. All right, so this is from Without Love. Black and Blue, love this band to death. Basically, these guys, they had a great debut album, self-titled, produced by Dieter Dierks. Doesn't really sound like a Dieter Dierks album, you know. Doesn't sound like a hard marble kitchen countertop sort of thing. But no, it's really good. Well, I guess a lot of his albums don't. The Scorpions ones don't particularly as well. I'm always thinking Metal Health when I say that. Not Metal Health. Metal Heart by Accept. He produces the first one. Great album, pretty heavy album, really cool. And then that's 1984, but then they do this album, Without Love, 1985. So this thing comes out. It's produced by Bruce Fairburn, and it's done at, you know, his, you know, the three different Vancouver studios. And the big story about this one is that the results and, you know, hearing what went on there and the whole experience with Bruce Fairburn, got Bon Jovi to go there. And then Bon Jovi got absolutely famous, but, you know, by working with Bruce Fairburn sort of thing that kicked off their huge, huge part of their career. So this whole go to Vancouver and try harder episode, go listen to that one. You'll get the whole history of that, that sort of concept. But an amazing, amazing album. And again, me and my buddies were shocked at how it was a fair bit more melodic, fair bit more glammy, bubblegummy, hair metal-y, whatever you want to call it. But we loved it. So again, it's the idea of commercial, hooky, accessible, but also we can add in, something to this fray. Does it exist? Does it not exist? Better songwriting, right? I mean, it does exist, but it's a very abstract concept that is arguable for everybody. It's very subjective and not very objective, right? Have that debate. Are the songs better songs on Without Love versus the debut? Then, unfortunately, this band comes out with Nasty Nasty in 86 and In Heat in 88, both produced by Gene Simmons, and I don't like them as much. Most people kind of don't, I suppose. They just seem to fall into a, it feels a little mercenary, like they're repeating themselves, like they've lost the plot, they've lost the charm, they've lost the warmth and the personality that you got on the Without Love album. By the way, we got the fire on this guest star Mike Reno from Loverboy on it. And another cool thing about this band, then they had a reunion album, I think it's 2011, Hell Yeah, and it's really good. And to me, this brings up a point. To me, it proves that the band was really talented, right? Because there are good songs on that. And Pete Pardo and I just went on Guitar Hacks show and did a ranking of the Rat catalog, and Infestation kind of proves the same thing. But another thing that Rat does, which I find kind of interesting, that fits this concept, the Rat catalog is very uniform, almost frustratingly uniform at times. But in going through it really carefully, I noticed two things. I really liked when they tried any form of ballad, because it was always kind of interesting. It had heavy parts, cool chord changes. Maybe it was up-tempo. There was some drumming. Maybe it was kind of power ballady, but mostly it stayed away from the tropes of the hideous power ballad. So that is an example of Rat going poppy and me liking it. And the other thing is, I really liked when they did the poppy hard rock songs. Not the ones that seemed like cash in hair metal songs, but the ones, you know, I remember making my notes for the Hack Show. I would say, this reminds me of the New York Dolls or Hanoi Rocks, or it's a little punky, right? So when Rat would do those different things and they were quite melodic, and you know, it was like they were reaching out, you know, a big bro hug sort of thing, right? So that's an example of two cases, two ways that Rat went poppy, and I was happy about it, and frankly, kind of surprised about it, right? Because normally, you know, I just want my Rat to be really heavy and riffy, and those are the better songs. And granted, those are the favorite songs, but yeah, there were a lot of examples of that I thought was really cool. So I wanted to mention, I've left enough time here. Good. For some honorable mentions. So in this idea of, I always have to go back to this. So yeah, Glad They Went Poppy is our concept, right? So honorable mentions, another great one for me that I was always surprised about was Vandenberg going into Heading for the Storm. So from the debut, they definitely get poppier and mellower and slicker. And for the longest time, I was not happy with that album. And I still think Alibi is probably my favorite, but you know, it's very close with Heading for the Storm. So yeah, Vandenberg's one. Genesis is another one. You guys all know that my favorite Genesis albums are definitely Abacab first and probably Duke second. And, you know, I'm kind of a fan of Genesis as well. So it's cool that Genesis went poppy, and I'm glad they went poppy kind of thing. Yes, you could. So now we're getting a little weaker here. Yes, debatable. 90125 is the pop, 90120 again, here we go again, is them going poppier, and we can have that debate, but obviously it was a huge album, it's a really good album, but we can argue about whether they were actually better. I mean, a lot of people love Drama as well. Scorpions is a good one, because I've often said that I kind of get more out of, you know, that trilogy, I call it, of Love Drive, Animal Magnetism, and Blackout. So when Matthias Jabs joins and Uli John Roth is out, they definitely go poppier, less Hendrix-y, krautrock-y, less 70s, less old classic rock, and into, you know, as they say with these guys, an Americanized sound, right? I definitely don't like when they go even more popular in Love at First Sting. That was a big step down. But those three albums, you could argue, are them going somewhat poppier. I often thought I could have included literally a sweep of the whole Minneapolis scene sound. I think I did a whole Minneapolis episode, but Replacements, Husker Du, Soul Asylum, all three of those I liked when they went poppier. So Replacements started as kind of like a college rocky punk rock band, short songs, silly songs, and then they started adding in the acoustic. The songs got longer, a little more ambitious, you get to, you know, Tim and Pleased to Meet Me, starting with Hootenanny, I suppose. But you get up into that, and those are my favorite Replacements albums. And then, again, I guess, like Scorpions, is this the first time in history anybody's compared Replacements to Scorpions? Like Scorpions, Replacements almost get too poppy, right? Soul Asylum kind of does the same thing. They start a little more riffy, hard rocky, punky, and then they add a little bit of a pop element, and I really, really appreciate them for it. But then the albums stay murky, pea soup green, and then they get... And then they get even more poppy, and then I'm not happy. So same sort of thing as Scorpions and Replacements. Husker Du, on the other hand, Husker Du starts quite noisy. You know, Metal Circus, Zen Arcade. They start to bring a little melody into it with New Day Rising. But then as you close off, what are they called? Candy Apple Gray. What's the other one called? We got Warehouse Sounds, Songs and Stories. One other one in there. Candy Apple. Anyways, the last three, you got two single albums and a double album. They're basically all similar, and they're basically, you know, it's still buzzsaw guitars and pretty rockin' guitar, bass, and drums, but there's lots and lots of melody. So, yeah, give me poppy Husker Du anyway, any day. I'm not a snobby Husker Du fan, because the snobby ones always pick Zen Arcade. You know, double albums are always important. I mean, these guys have two, mind you, but people always pick that one. You know, I've been known to argue for the cusp album, New Day Rising, as the best, but give me the most commercial Husker Du any day. That's the most utilitarian for me. Frank Zappa, strictly commercial, you know, that comp. Again, give me poppy short songs, funny songs, songs that are songs from Frank Zappa any day. I'm happy. The Damned a little bit, the XTC a little bit. You know, you could say Damned went from a noisy, you know, raucous punk band maybe across the first three, and then they started adding in a lot of different elements. The 60s stuff, and you know, so my favorite period is that whole Black Album, Strawberries, even the goth period when they were the poppiest. The Tubes, you could say they went from a classic rocky sort of band, and then I totally love Remote Control and Completion Backwards Principle, so you could say they went poppy there. So love that. Kansas, when they went poppy, you know, with Everybody's My Friend and what's that other one called, Fight Fire with Fire, that whole thing, love that. I don't know, you could say you know, go over to the Swedish heavy metal end of things, Opeth. I mean, they went melodic singing and acoustic guitars and more prog, so they definitely went softer and more accessible. Entombed went from you know, pretty extreme Swedish death metal to death and roll, right? That whole Wolverine blues into that period where you could say they got a little more rock and rollsy, so you could say they went poppier. The Clash went from a punk band, you know, overnight from Give 'Em Enough Rope to London Calling, just lots of heaviness to no heaviness. Fleetwood Mac, interesting one, you know, when you've got the big album, the White Fleetwood Mac album and Rumours. Obviously, this band went from kind of a British blues boom band to just a weird kind of classic rock band to definitely a much poppier band, and I'm happy they did it. Pink Floyd is a funny case. I mean, did Pink Floyd go poppy with Dark Side of the Moon? You could argue it, right? Because previously they were quite irascible, and, you know, you think of Adam Hartmother and Umma Gumma. Before that, they were a psych band, but they're pretty inaccessible. I often consider that stuff before Dark Side of the Moon almost krautrock. But Dark Side of the Moon, you know, broken into nice songs, beautiful recording. I think they kind of went poppy, right? And we're all glad for it. They did amazing. So those are my honorable mentions. That's a lot of them, right? And I wanted to mention as another sort of category that people consider honorable mentions. You know, Def Leppard, people will say Pyromania, they got amazing. Hysteria, they got amazing. You know, I obviously, you know, my views on Hysteria. But, you know, I personally don't ascribe to this one. Another one I don't ascribe to is a lot of people say Nazareth when they went poppy with Jeff Skunk Baxter on Malice in Wonderland. You know, there's a little extra excitement around Nazareth at that time. Heart's gone cold and all that kind of stuff, right? So people, you know, had that debate. Hey, has Nazareth gotten kind of sophisticated? Tease, our Canadian band here. You know, I swear by the first two albums, the two heavy classic rock 70s sort of albums. But a lot of people think 1979's One Night Stands, where they definitely toned down the metal, is their best album. So there you go. And just William Walker had given me a few examples. This is kind of the funny part. So he suggested this episode, and then he gave me a bunch of examples that I totally didn't agree with. But anyways, you know, in honor of him coming up with this episode idea, I wanted to mention his. He mentioned Eclipse by Yngwie, Empire by Queensryche, Leatherwolf self-titled, Under Lock and Key, Whitesnake self-titled, and Kiss Dress to Kill. I don't agree with any of those ones. And then I had sort of a third tier, which I kind of believe as well. A good one actually is Derringer, because I've often thought for years and years, I thought Sweet Evil was their best album, but now I'm starting to think, you know, If I Weren't So Romantic, I'd Shoot You is. And there they get a little poppier, more lighthearted, more accessible, and less sort of heavy metal classic rock. You know, Boomtown Rats, apparently you're not supposed to like the second and third album, or maybe the second album, but I think they got better when they got poppier, even though I love the debut as well. I can almost start saying that I'm turning around. Maybe I'm just getting old. I definitely am getting old. But the Dead Boys, I might like the second album more than Young, Loud, and Snotty, right? We Have Come for Your Children. So I might like that more now. Adverts, definitely like the super poppy album, Cast of Thousands, which people you're supposed to absolutely hate that album compared to the first one, Crossing the Red Sea with the Adverts, which is very tribal and punky. So yeah, there's one. Rush signals, you could say. So Rush has a lot of phases. So we're getting down to the weak strokes here. Y&T, Black Tiger, Mean Streak. Are they poppier than? Well, I'd say they're poppier than Earthshaker. So it fits there. ZZ Top, Tejas, you could say they lightened up, and that's almost, I guess it is my favorite ZZ Top. Pete and I did a show on Faith No More where I said, you know, call me a Faith No More poser, just give me all the commercial songs. You know, my favorite Thin Lizzy is Renegade, and it's considered a pretty poppy album. X, so here's a band where they started off a little more, you know, roughshod, and then they added some melody, and the songs got more thoughtful and more accessible, and that is my favorite period. So I'm a massive X fan, period, but I come on board really big, kind of third, fourth album sort of thing. And then a UFO is a funny one. So you go from the Michael Schenker era to the Paul Chapman era, and so you go from a classic rock era, but you know, I wouldn't say the Paul Chapman stuff is particularly mellower, but it is more Americanized and more accessible. So can you call it poppy sort of thing? So there you go. Lots and lots of honorable mentions. If you like this show and want to support future episodes, please go to ko-fi.com/MartinPopoff. Hit that red support button. Buy me a coffee or a pint. This week, I would like to thank Joe Beck at Bel Air Expediting. He's back. He's back at the Contrarians as well. We had him on a panel recently. So very cool. A wise music swami, Joe is. Lee Clifford, Augustin Garcia de Paredes, Steve Polari, Brian Sager, David Rhea, and William Walker. Thank you all very much. You can go to martinpopoff.com for all your book needs. You know, I got the Cure book, the Pink Floyd still in stock, the AC/DC. I know these are expensive. I'm sorry about that. They're big swanky books. The David Bowie is still in stock. And 30, 40 other titles of mine are there as well. I sign them, ship them out of the office, PayPal buttons, all that stuff. So there you go. So I won't go back on my word. Your homework for today is just go play Golden Earring, When the Lady Smiles.
Find all of our shows, notes, social, and links at www.pantheonpodcast.com or wherever you listen to great podcasts. All songs can be found for purchase on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. Please purchase these great and important tracks. Find us on Facebook at the RNRAP. We are on Instagram at RNR Archaeology. Tweet us at RNR Archaeology.